Hi, this is Lisa Lane Brown from The Courage to Win, and welcome to Session 7 of the Coach Power Training Program. This is the first session on career and financial mastery, and tonight's session will feature the coaching blueprint for making money quickly by mastering sales, including selling people on hiring you for large sums of money. But there's even more tonight, because the coaching process is really going to come together this evening. This is a stage of the training where you're going to consolidate everything you've learned so far about coaching into using the blueprints I'm providing for you here in this training to simply and easily structure your coaching sessions. And this is the point where it would be most effective to give you the three-part big picture of the Courage to Win coaching system. So the first step in the coaching system will be your intro session with a client. Now, we have not done any intro sessions on our calls because all of you, as you jumped into coaching with me on the phone, had already begun the coaching process. In other words, you were already enrolled in a coaching program. And an intro session is separate from that, and it's outside of that. So you begin a coaching process initially by selling a client your services in a package of 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or whatever length of time you would like to make a contract for. And the way you do this is in an intro session, which is usually free or low cost. It's completely up to you. And actually, if you're opening my emails, which I hope you are, I sent out an invite this week to demo this for you. So there was an email that said the subject line, your name, save your relationship, dot, dot, dot. And in that email, it invited people to take part in a free 30-minute intro session. So if you haven't opened that email, you want to go back to your inbox and do that and quickly review that invite, because it's a model for you. And during your intro session, it's a very simple process. You ask the client, you know, what is your goal or vision? What are the challenges that are slowing you down or standing in your way? How would you benefit by turning the situation around and reaching your goal? And then at the end of the call, you present your coaching program as a potential solution to this. Now, I'm not going to go into this with tremendous detail tonight at all, because I'm going to present this detailed blueprint, including the questions that you'll need to ask in the bonus session called Marketing Mastery for Coaches, because that's where that fits. And I haven't presented this to you yet because, again, technically, this session isn't actual coaching, although the client receives a tremendous amount of value from that session. It is extremely helpful because coaching is the most potent tool for change, in my opinion. And in this intro session, what you're going to do is bring the client face to face with the problem that he's been grappling with and ask him to make a commitment in terms of, are you wanting to solve this problem now in your life? How is it affecting you? What are the actual challenges you're facing? What do you really want? And how would it benefit you from solving it? And it's an extraordinarily valuable moment for the client because he has the opportunity to make that decision. Is this the time for me? Is this something that is important enough for me to invest my time and money into? Where am I really at with this? So when you hear me talk about this, if you haven't done this before, you might feel a little bit stressed out at the thought of it. But I want you to remember that anybody who gets good coaching is going to make progress. He's going to wipe that problem off the map, and he's going to be a much happier person. And whatever he pays for the coaching will be a fraction of the value that he actually gets. Honestly, 1/100th probably of the value that he'll get from that coaching process. So it's really important to remember that. And that is step one of the big picture. And again, I'll be providing that blueprint for you in the bonus session. That's week 9. Step 2 of the coaching process, the big picture here, is overcoming fear, learned helplessness, and procrastination. And once you've talked to the client about the problem itself and talked about a vision, what you do is you continue the coaching process by diagnosing the learned helplessness and the fear that is holding the client back. And we have spent a lot of time on this in this program. And, of course, you do it using the very Courage to Win principles we've been studying and the blueprint that I have provided for you tonight. And at this point, when you do this, you and the client are both very aware of the fears and the beliefs and the passivity that's holding him back from taking action on his goal. And during the entire coaching engagement, whether it's 3 or 6 or 12 months, you will use the mental toughness practices of self-acceptance and commitment in various formats like sentence completions or emotional visualization or written assignments to overcome these fears and beliefs. And we've done some of those throughout this training, but there are more. And I will be providing a comprehensive list of those tools by the end of the program as well. So you essentially go into that inner game, into those fears very quickly. And you have been listening and observing this and doing it yourself in your coaching calls as well. So this is not a new step, but it is the next step after the goal and the vision has been laid out by the client. So even though you diagnose the fear and learn helplessness and beliefs in the second session, you'll come back to them many times over the course of that 3 to 6 to 12 months. You'll come back to it probably in every single session, more than likely. And that's absolutely appropriate, because if the goal is big, often the fear is big. And sometimes it takes a few months to really get underneath that fear, help the client move through it, and become very comfortable not having the fear anymore. So you'll come back to it again and again and use those same tools over and over, but it is introduced in the second session. Now, step 3, after the second session, you're going to start introducing competence, the practice of competence, which is basically helping the client upgrade his or her techniques, getting that superior technique and skills. And it might be in relationships or career or money or weight loss. I mean, there are a lot of niches that you can go into as a coach, executive leadership coaching. And by session 3, which is around the end of the first month of coaching, you'll have introduced the practice of competence by educating the client on these are the superior skills and techniques that you're going to need. And you're going to be guiding the client through the process of gaining these skills. And the client will educate herself. She'll get mentors. She'll get resources. You'll be one of them, but you'll be one of many. And again, you will do this using the blueprints that I provide. So for tonight, for example, you have been given the blueprints for both relationship mastery and sales success, the actual techniques. And relationships are a great example, because we've been working on relationships for a couple of weeks, actually 3 weeks, and you have a lot of knowledge now that you can pass on to the client about these are the skills that are really important, these are the skills you need superior technique in to create that relationship of your dreams. And tonight, I'm going to demo both overcoming learned helplessness, fear, and procrastination, and sales success, sales competence, so you can see how to use these blueprints very, very easily. And the last caveat is so important, which is coaching is about action, always. So at the end of every blueprint and every session with a client, you always ask, what action can you take this week to help you achieve your goal? What action can you take this week to help you achieve your goal? It's a simple question. It's a potent question. If that's all you ask in the entire session, the client would get incredible value. In tonight's session, as I said, we'll be demoing those two blueprints, because you're going to see just how easy it is to do. Before we jump into that, though, I want to address an issue that came up this week, because I emailed most of you throughout the week at various points. And one of you sent me some really astute observations that I know is something we all go through in our coaching lives. And it's so important that I want to address it first, which is, how do I get comfortable digging? You know, how do I ask the questions that need to be asked if I'm just feeling kind of hesitant or nosy or invasive, and you know, I'm just not really getting in there the way I need to? And similar to this is, how do I provide those honest assessments and push the client when that's necessary? And I don't want to offend the client. I don't want to upset the client. And so that's a very, very important question, because both of those skills and practices are absolutely central to being a phenomenal coach and providing value for the client. And so I'm going to address them right now. So the first is, how do I get comfortable digging? How do I ask those questions? Well, you know, an example of a question might be, well, it sounds like you're not feeling loved. Would that be fair? It's a very specific question. It's emotional in nature. And some of you are saying, well, it seems like these are personal things. And I think whatever resistance you might be experiencing is really natural, because you don't know the person. You've never even met the person in most cases. And within minutes, you're discussing really intimate emotions and experiences. And this is kind of unusual in daily life. So the first thing, I think, is just to realize that you'll become more comfortable with this in time. The second thing to realize is that while friends and family members may not want to talk about their problems or fears sometimes, other times they do. And coaching clients always do. That's why they're there. They have signed up for this. And if you hit a spot where, for whatever reason, the person does not want to share something, that person can say, you know, I don't want to talk about that right now, or I don't want to go there, or that's just not something I really want to go into. They have that right, and they're perfectly capable of saying that. That's very rare, but it can happen, and in which case, great. You know, you just move on to something else. But most of the time, the person really does want to talk about it desperately. And remember, there's a healing that comes from talking about it. And I'm sure you can relate to this from your coaching calls. Most people are actually more comfortable opening up to a complete stranger than they are to someone they're very close to if they're feeling some shame over an area of their lives. And this may sound kind of paradoxical, but I have found it to be very true. In my seminar, for example, it's really common for me to pair up people into buddies. So they have several buddies throughout the course of the training. And within minutes, they're discussing very core issues to their lives. And I've often heard them say, boy, I'm sure glad we didn't do this in my department, you know, an in-house course, because I wouldn't have talked to my colleagues. I needed a complete stranger. So being a stranger can be a huge advantage for the client and for you. Secondly, if you're feeling uncomfortable with this, even after you've thought about what I've just said and you've gotten more experience, I think it might help to remember that some of your discomfort may be coming from the socialization we've had that is hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, and to understand that we've deeply internalized that it's actually not okay to have problems, and this idea that it's not okay to have fears, let alone talk about them. And so the more deeply we've been socialized in this way, the harder it is to ask questions of clients, because we actually are feeling kind of shameful on their behalf. But if you can accept the idea that we're all equal in spirit, no matter where we are in our goal achievement thing, and that there's no shame at all in having a problem or a goal unreached, there's no shame to it on any level, and there's certainly no shame in having a fear, it's a lot easier to dig deeper if you're coming from that philosophical place. And the last comment I'll make is that when a client tells you something that you need to push him or her on and confront them a little bit so that they see more objectively some of the choices that they're making, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable doing it if you phrase it in a super respectful way. It's all in the delivery. So here's an example of a really respectful way of approaching an assessment that you need to make that's pretty honest. You might say, you know, I understand it makes you anxious to hurt your wife's feelings by telling her she's in your circle and that you need some emotional space. Yeah, it makes total sense to me that you wouldn't want to do it. But having said that, I'm sure that because you're feeling smothered, you only reject her more because you're not being honest with her. And, you know, this kind of feels like a lose-win position to me. What do you think could be a win-win position that would allow you to preserve her dignity, yet be more authentic, so you can actually feel more loving towards her? And when you present assessments in a respectful way, the client will not take offense. But if you say, oh, well, you know, you're just being kind of wussy and you just need to tell her she's in your circle. Well, that's kind of judgmental. And it's implying that, you know, something wrong with the way you're handling it. Well, that's not respectful, and that is going to offend the client. So if you come from a place of respect and you express it in a respectful way, it's not a problem. And so that is the key to really getting over that issue. All right, logistics. You can email me to lisa@lisabrown.ca at any point tonight if you have a question. And now I'd like you to turn to your materials for this evening's session, because we're going to jump in here and I'm going to go through a demo of these blueprints. And you'll notice what I've done is I've provided two things. So the first blueprint you want is overcoming fear and procrastination. And what I have provided for you in the blueprint is mostly a list of questions, powerful questions, that you're going to use to take the client through the session. But I've also included, in some cases, just a little bit of education, because I know that it can be so much easier if you have a script when you're teaching. You know, when I first started teaching seminars, I stuck to the script very closely. So if you just kind of stick to these, and by the way, these blueprints are not set in stone, so you know, you can go back to the materials and pull out more teaching and put them in your blueprints, and you know, feel free to bring that content to any session. But it's just really nice to have it in front of you, and that way you can just casually mention some concepts to the client as you're taking him or her through the session. And it's just a nice way to structure things and keep on track. Now, as you listen to the client, you're going to deviate from time to time, and I'm sure that I will tonight. So it's the map is not the territory. You know, you look at a map, then you actually drive it. There are all these little nuances as you go on the route that you can't get from the map. So this is the map, but it's not the territory, and you're going to deviate from it from time to time, which is totally appropriate. As the client zigs, you got to zig with the client, and then you got to zag with the client. So just relax and be yourself as you do this. And most of all, trust yourself. If something pops into your mind, trust yourself. Say it. Make sure you're being extremely accepting and extremely respectful, but say it. I think you'll be very surprised that it is much easier to coach when you're being yourself. You don't want to try to turn into a whole other person when you're coaching. This will not work. The client will sense that and think you're putting on some strange facade. Just be your complete self. And I will tell you that from listening to your calls, I have noticed that you are being yourselves, which is wonderful. And I don't think anybody is struggling with that, but if at any point you feel like you are, and if having a structure makes you feel strange or in some way that you're just not being yourself, then drop it and go back to being yourself, because above all else, that is most important. Okay, turning to the blueprint for overcoming fear, learned helplessness, and procrastination. Mary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Fabulous. Okay, so you don't need the blueprint right now because I would like you to be the coachee. And we're going to, this part of the coaching will go very, very fast because, we've already been working on this through the training for some time, the whole learned helplessness thing, as in, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it tonight. And then we're going to turn to the sales success blueprint. So wonderful. Can you, tell me a little bit about your business?
Well, I've been working at home. I have a master's and a PhD in natural health. And I've been, for a while, I did massages, and I worked with, to teach mostly lifestyle, you know, from a natural health point of view. And I also work with a company that sells essential oils and supplements and stuff like that. So for the last 10, 12 years, I guess, I've been trying to build a business with that company and build, well, for a while I was trying to build clientele, and then we ended up in a move from Minnesota to New Mexico. And so I've gone more online because I think we're probably going to be moving again. So it's not necessarily something where I want to build a local clientele. And so I've been really very frustrated, though, because I really haven't financially made any money. When I was doing massages, I did fairly well. But as far as getting coaching clients or, you know, any of that kind of stuff, I really haven't had any real success at it.
Okay, wonderful. So the niche, the overall niche is health, I would guess then.
Yes.
Would that be an okay way to talk about it?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. And so in terms of, you know, your goal or your vision for the business, what would be something that would make you pretty happy? You know, if you could wave your realistic magic wand, what would make you pretty happy in a six-month time frame?
In a six-month time frame?
Yeah.
$1,000 a month?
Sorry, pardon me?
Did you ask me what would, in a six-month period, how much money did I want?
Well, you money, sales, clients, any way that what would make you feel like, hey, I'm making progress here. I'm feeling pretty happy about my business.
Yeah.
Do you have like a monthly target you'd like to achieve?
I would like. My goal is $5,000 a month.
Perfect. Okay. So wonderful. And I noticed that was actually pretty easy for you to come up with. In other words, that's a very clear goal in your mind.
Yes.
Fabulous. Okay. Excellent. Well, you know about learned helplessness from this training. You know it's a special type of fear that's essentially pessimism. And you also know that it's based on previous disappointments and challenges that we've had. And that what happens over time is that, and it's mostly unconscious, is that we just start to give up a little and become more passive than we normally are when we have learned helplessness. And one of the Courage to Win tools that we use to overcome this idea of learned helplessness is we make the pessimism super visible. And there's a great quote, what we resist persists and what we look at disappears. So just going to quickly ask you a few questions to make the pessimism a little more visible, and you said you were frustrated. So can you just quickly tell me what frustrations you've had trying to get the business to that $5,000, and what have you noticed there?
As far as actually making money, I really have had no success. I get to a point, I can teach a class, I can do that part, but then when it actually comes to the selling or asking for the sale or any of that, it's like my brain, I go brain dead and I can't even think of a decent way, you know, words to ask.
Okay, good. So let me just quickly check in. Have you ever ran an advertisement anywhere for either the oils that you're selling or for coaching services or for anything? Have you actually run any kind of advertising campaign at all?
Yes, I have. The oils. I don't know if I actually ever did for coaching. I thought about it off and on, but I've never felt like I had enough knowledge to actually be a coach.
So for the coaching, to be a health coach, we'll just call it that for right now, you actually haven't made that offer to anybody, as in no advertisements or direct mail or, there are lots of different mediums, right? I mean, heck, you could cold call if you wanted to. I don't recommend it, but, you know, people do it. So you haven't actually done that. Is that fair?
That's fair for the coaching,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. And for the oils, what advertising campaigns have you done?
I have run a few ads in the paper at various times.
Okay.
I have gotten a few phone calls and then when they call, they ask, you know, they take over and ask what's it about. So, you know, you start trying to explain it, and you lost it right there. They just go away.
Okay. So the newspaper ads, how many ads did you run?
Oh, probably over the years, I've probably run 10 or 15.
Okay. And do you know your conversion rate? You know, would it be like a great conversion rate for a lot of campaigns? Can be 2%, it can be 3%. For something like that, 2 or 3% would be very good. Do you know what percent of people would have called?
I don't know. Would that be based on the circulation of the paper that it was in?
Right.
And then phone calls I got?
Yeah.
Oh, I would say probably more like 0.5%.
Okay. But even that is actually not bad. 0.5%, depending on the price point and what you're doing, sometimes those numbers can work. Because what you're telling me is you did get some response. Is that right? How many calls do you think you got?
I probably got about 20 or 30.
20 or 30, okay. And so I'm going to just have you note that, Mary, because 20 or 30 calls suggest to me that there was something in that ad that was working. We're going to do more sales work in a few moments here, but it tells me that minimally you can tweak it. There was something about it that got people's attention. It got them to pick up the phone.
Right.
So you definitely will want to, and we'll talk about that more in a few minutes, but you always want to notice what is working.
Okay.
And so it suggests to me that whenever you do an advertising campaign, there's always kind of a post-mortem of, hey, what worked and what didn't work? Did we meet our numbers? And if we didn't, how can we potentially tweak it? But like, let me put it this way. If you got zero people, then I would say that's what's called as there's no pulse on that at all. And that means it's not an offer that appeals to people generally. Or the ad itself was just not written properly, one of the two. When there's zero response, it's either people just aren't interested in what you're offering, or it's just not written properly. So the fact that you got 20 or 30 calls tells me that it is of interest to people and you can minimally tweak it.
Okay.
Now, in terms of frustrations, so have you actually done anything else other than the newspaper ads?
No. Well, the last year, well, I did do an ad in our bulletin at church here in New Mexico, and I haven't gotten anything off of that.
What was that for? What was the ad for?
That one was for weight loss.
Okay. So because we know weight loss is of interest to people, what that says is that particular ad needs to be rewritten. So we'll just note that. Are there any other frustrations you've had? So we had a bulletin ad, newspaper ads, any others where you've tried to sell? Because I got it that you got 20 or 30 calls, and that was really frustrating that nobody said yes. Anything else?
Right. And then the last couple of years, I've been working mostly just online. So I've been trying to get I've got a website, and I've been working on trying to be consistently get something out there every week on the website, like a blog. And but, you know, we have talked about that, and, you know, it doesn't really – I have written a book, and so for a little while I was kind of just telling little tidbits from the book, and then if you wanted to know more, you could buy the book. And then sometimes if I'm writing about the oils, I will write, if you want more information or to purchase the oils, you can go to here, you know. So that's the other thing that I've done right now. I have, like, I think there's 60 people on my on my list right now on my website.
Okay. And with either the blog or your articles that you send out for people that have signed up for them, has anyone purchased the book or purchased the oils from online at all?
No.
Okay. So what that suggests to me is that we're not sure about what's being given to them in the articles. That's not converting
right.
to sales. And so that definitely needs to be tweaked. As far as a book goes, because there is a market for health books, I'm going to say that that is something people want. I'm just going to assume that. Are other people selling these oils successfully?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so we know that there's interest there.
Yes.
Okay, so basically the frustrations are converting people on the phone and converting them online. That's the key, right?
Right.
Good. Okay, well, what is the belief that you have developed based on these experiences about converting people or selling people? Can you pinpoint it for me?
Well, usually what I tell myself is something to the effect that I don't have the right personality to sell. I tend to be more on the shyer side, so it's very difficult for me to just start talking to people. And
well, that's if, so is that the case even when they call you?
Well, if they call me, I answer their questions, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't lead anywhere. So I don't know what's going on there.
So the belief is I'm too shy to sell. Is that sort of how would you sum it up in words?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's that I'm too shy. It's that basically, I guess I don't know how to say it right or how to do it right, how to sell right.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know how.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Even though it
gets
me frustrating because, man, I have studied a lot of different sales techniques and a lot of stuff, but I've never really worked one-on-one with anybody with it. I've just done a lot of stuff on my own. I have books. I don't know if you know who Dani Johnson is. She does a lot of training for multi-level marketing companies and stuff like that. And went to her conference. I have all of her stuff sitting here on my shelf and stuff like that. So it's just, and there's a part of me that knows that there is some way to make this work for me. And that's why I haven't totally given up.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, it's been a long time, and it's just really frustrating now.
Yes. Well, of course, and that's absolutely, and that's, I totally understand why you feel that way, because, you know, part of what I hear you saying is, despite the fact that I've done some training and I've read books and I've, you know, I have educated myself, it's not that I haven't been completely winging it, I'm not nailing the pitch that I need to, you know, I'm not delivering the benefits, talking about the benefits in a way that is getting people to buy.
Right.
And, you know, this would be frustrating because you're feeling like I'm not learning, right?
Right.
Yeah. And you're an educator, are you not? Yeah, so no wonder you're feeling frustrated because, I mean, education, you're not a stranger to that.
No.
Yeah, so you have high standards for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, you would expect to be able to pick up on it quite quickly.
And I always have before.
Right.
This one escapes me.
You know, I want to say that it there are some skills that are easily learned alone. You know that sometimes we can just watch and imitate very easily. Mm-hmm. My personal experience has been that sales is not one of them. That I know there are people who watch and learn sales more easily than others, but my travels have suggested to me in working with people in seminars as well that it's not really something that you can just watch and do. So just as an aside, I think it would be, when you said, you know, I've never really worked with anybody, I think that what we're doing tonight and this kind of work is very, very beneficial because it is one of those skills that is more challenging to pick up just from reading. You know, there is an art and science to it. So let's move to the idea of how is this belief that I can't learn how to do this? You know, I can't learn how to sell effectively, whether it be online or on the phone. How has it been making you a little demotivated or passive? Can you tell me?
Well, the basic thing for me is I just lower my standards. It's like I act like I don't care. It's no big deal. I don't really need the money. I mean, my husband has a good job and all that jazz, but I know it is. I, you know, I'm, like you said, I'm a little bit depressed. It's not like I'm clinically depressed, but yeah.
It's getting you down a bit.
It's got me down, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. And how does that translate into action? You know, how does this affect what you do in terms of working on the business?
Well, lots of times, I guess technically I shouldn't tell you that I've been working on it for 10, 12 years because there's a short period of flurry of action, and then there's, you know, 6 months of just giving up, and then I get up enough courage to give it a shot again and do that for a little while, and then, you know, it's just an up and down kind of thing. So there's a lot
of
downtime.
So it's really, you sort of burst working.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it affects your action is you'll do something and then you'll just, you know, not touch it for a while, and therefore your momentum is slower and it's harder to get results because you're not consistently working at it. And I would imagine actually it would be more difficult to get learning because you're not getting feedback. You know, that really is the core element of learning is, you know, you do a campaign and you look at the results and you analyze what happened in the campaign, and then you get data about why, and then you learn. And so it would seem that if you're burst working, be much tougher to get that feedback.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and then I'm not surprised the learning has been somewhat stalled out because, you know, often when we leave something for any length of time, we forget the lesson that we got the first time.
Right.
And actually, I do want to say that in terms of what you've actually done, as far as advertising goes, it's actually when you look at the amount of advertising you've done, it's very little.
Very little.
Yeah. So sometimes it feels like, oh, I'm making all these offers and I've got myself out there, and I'm really, you know, being vulnerable in the world because I'm presenting this offer. You might want to just step back and realize that you've actually made very few live offers.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. So when it comes to how many frustrations or, what, you know, if you even want to call them failures, there actually haven't been very many.
That's probably true.
Yeah. And you also might want to know that, and this is sort of a piece of trivia, that the top copywriters in the world, you know these infomercials that you see at 2 in the morning for ab machines and whatnot?
Right.
Well, the very best copywriters, the people that craft those sales messages, you have to be the best of the best to write those because you'll lose your shirt on TV if you don't get a pulse.
Right.
So the top people work on those, and they get a success. They consider a success 1 in every 8 campaigns. So 1 in every 8 infomercial flops. And an infomercial takes between $300,000 and $500,000 to put together.
Right.
So those guys, their success rate is 1 in 8. So when you do a campaign and it doesn't work, you're in good company.
Okay.
Okay. So understanding that even when your skill set, like let's say you said to me, well, I want to be, you know, one of the top copywriters in the world or crafting these campaigns, even if you were at that level, you need to grasp that there will still be failures, but they call them tests.
Oh, okay.
They don't call them failures. They call them tests.
Okay.
Okay. Good. So just as a, you know, one of the Courage to Win tools that we've been teaching and that we use is self-acceptance. How are you feeling able to accept yourself at the moment? Like, how's that been going with self-acceptance?
I think it's certainly down some, but for the most part, I think that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, feeling like you can accept how you feel about it, accept yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you a quick sentence completion that you might find beneficial. If I were 5% more self-accepting today, can you complete that sentence for me?
I'd be a little happier.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little more confidence.
Mm-hmm.
In trying again.
In trying a campaign, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably improve my relationship with my husband a little bit.
Nice. Good. So I'm going to ask you to write those out, like write 5 to 10 of those every day for the next 2 weeks. Don't do weekends. And they're just really nice, and they facilitate a deeper level of acceptance. And I think when you've been struggling with a specific area for a long time, it's a very gradual eating away at the confidence that occurs. And this is just a really nice way of deepening your self-acceptance about it. That is only, you know, less than 5 minutes a day.
Okay.
I'm just going to ask you to do that for me. Would that be fair?
Okay. Yep.
Okay, great. Good. Well, I'd like you to turn to the Sales Success Blueprint, because we're going to go through this together. And Mary, feel free to make any notes that you think would be beneficial anytime we go through something.
Okay.
So we've got your ideal sales goal, which is the $5,000 a month. Fabulous. It's very specific. And just to be clear, will this money go right into your pocket? Because you're the owner, I would imagine it would, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's fantastic. So, I mean, you could be making more money next week. There's no barrier, right?
Right.
Good. So yeah, how would that feel just to be able to do that?
Ecstatic.
Oh, that's great. Good. I want you to keep that in the background as we go through this, and as you go through different campaigns, because touching base with that, and you know, I know that money is wonderful, and we all love money, but it's also a symbol of being successful in what you're doing, and I know that that's important to you as well.
Right.
So just when we think about, because you have a website, and you've got a book and you've got some oils and you've got some coaching services you can sell. What are the different areas of sales when you go through just the concept of sales that you need to excel at, you know, the different skills that you'll need in order to reach that $5,000 goal? And I'm just going to give you some examples off, you know, off the top of my head. So identifying who your ideal client is, like that's kind of prospecting, creating the offer, you know, for example, a book is an offer, a coaching program is an offer, writing the sales or advertising copy for an ad, or if it's you're on the phone, it's a telephone script, generating leads, which if you're talking to people, it's creating trust, but if it's online, it's getting subscribers to come into your newsletter, and converting those leads into sales. So that's just sort of a random list, and for right now, I'd like to focus because I only want to focus on one offer tonight. Let's get you going on one thing.
Okay.
The Achilles heel of entrepreneurs is that they find it really hard to focus. Every day they've got 10 new ideas, and they're all really good, and they're all very exciting, and so it's easy to get lost in tangents. So I'm going to hold you to one thing.
Okay.
So let's just focus in on one thing that you want to sell immediately. What would that be?
Good coaching.
Great. Okay, so we're coaching services. All right. And of the different, you know, skills that I listed off, which ones are you going to need?
I'll need the offer. I'll need the leads and converting as well. I don't know. Would be all of them.
Yeah, exactly. It would be all of them. And so let's just quickly go through them and identify where your strengths lay at the moment.
Okay.
So just identifying your ideal client, we're going to get to that, so we're going to set that aside for now. Creating the offer. So earlier I talked about, you know, a coaching program offer. What do you see for that? Like, for example, can you tell me how long of a coaching program you would like to offer?
I guess what you were talking about earlier, that I thought that 3 to 6 months and the 12 months was really a good idea.
Okay, and when you talk about health, can you narrow down, and I know you did a recent weight loss advertisement, can you narrow down one niche that you could start coaching in? For and then what would be a good time frame for that niche? Like how many months would be good?
The Christian aspect, is that what we're talking about?
Well, we're going to set aside who your client's going to be for the moment.
Okay.
But health is just a really big subject.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So I'm just thinking, if you're going to coach somebody, you know, they need a niche because people will pay for solving a problem, right?
Right.
And that's what they're trying to do.
The losing weight.
Losing weight. Okay, let's just focus in on that because, hey, everybody wants to lose a bit of weight. Perfect. Okay, good. And so that would be the real focus of the coaching program. That will be your niche. And by the way, let's just look at your areas of strength when you think about, you know, creating an offer, writing copy, this kind of thing. What do you think of all those things that we talked about you would be best at?
Out of the writing the offer, the leads, the converting leads and stuff?
Yeah.
probably creating the offer.
Good. Okay, so if you offer a losing weight program, how many months should it be then?
Well, it probably depends on how much they want to lose, you know?
Yes, how ambitious is the goal? Well, if we could sort of go with an average, what would be best?
I would say the 6 months.
All right, so let's pick 6 months. Good. Okay. And what advertising campaigns have worked for weight loss for you? Have you developed any that work yet?
I haven't.
Okay, so that's a wide open thing. And let's go down to who your ideal client is. So can you describe the ideal client for a coaching program like this?
Well, what I have always pictured in my mind was are people similar to me, you know, middle-aged women, Christian women that just struggle with between, you know, 20 to 40 pounds or so.
Okay, so
I'm
20 to 40 pounds to lose, wanting to lose. Now, middle-aged, can you be a little more exact on that?
40 to 60.
Okay, very good. So female, 40 to 60, wanting to lose 20 to 40 pounds, and an affinity for the clientele from the, as a Christian, yes?
Right.
Yeah, and that's actually really good because whenever we're making an offer, it's really nice to choose clients who we have an affinity with. They relate to us, you know, they feel comfortable with us, and that's really nice. And where can these clients be found? You know, where do they hang out online? Where do they read? Especially if you add the Christian component into it.
Right. Well, churches.
Yep.
Losing weight or health. Blogs or forums, maybe?
Okay, so blogs and forums about that topic, yep. Or actual sites, right?
Or websites, yeah.
Yep. What about magazines? Newspapers? What would they be reading?
Let's see, what would I read? Maybe prevention or housekeeping, shape. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. And so do you think you could, you know, come up with a list of what they might be reading and looking at just based on your knowledge of this market?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to give that to you as an assignment because you'll definitely want to start thinking about, you know, where they're hanging out online and offline. We didn't mention gyms, but that might be one.
Right. Okay.
Good. So we're getting a picture now of these are the people that would be really a good fit for you to coach in a weight loss coaching program. And you know, when you gave me that description, I can really see that person. How about you?
Yes.
Yeah. It's really clear, isn't it? Yeah, and can you feel how important it would be for them to do this?
Yes.
And how it's going to change their lives to get this problem just gone forever?
Yes.
Good. Because, again, wiping out this kind of problem is so... It is such an emotional and such a wonderful experience that when you're thinking about any kind of, you know, advertising campaign or sales campaign or anything at all, you definitely want to be emotionally in touch with just how absolutely transformative it's going to be for that person.
Okay.
Good. Okay. Well, so tell me about the benefits of a coaching program, a weight loss coaching program. Give me the top three.
Support.
Sorry, I didn't quite get that.
Oh, support.
Okay,
education.
Support. Now, what do you mean support?
Well, I was thinking accountability, but I was also thinking support and having someone to talk to about their exercise program, their whatever they're eating, what their frustrations are, those kinds of things.
Yes, because you know it seems like one of these topics that you kind of suffer in silence about.
Right.
You know that it you kind of get down on yourself and you feel lousy about it, but it's not something that you're really going to talk to people about most of the time.
Right.
Yeah, so certainly having that support and the accountability, tell me about that.
Well, if I, you know, like you said, at the end of the coaching session, I ask them what they're going to do this week to reach their goal. And when they tell me, whatever they tell me, then they would feel some accountability to accomplishing it by the following week.
Yeah, they know they're going to have that meeting with you. They know it's coming up, and they want to be able to report something good.
Right.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, good. What other benefits of a weight loss coaching program would there be?
Well, you got support. Education was one of the other ones that I said. Accountability.
Why do I need education? Aren't I just lacking discipline? And don't I just need to stop eating chocolate?
No. Because to me, even though I said earlier exercise and diet, that's really kind of a minor part, especially when you're talking like 20 to 40 pounds. Maybe for extreme weight too. It's a lot of it's what's going on in your head. What are you telling yourself? What is you know, what's the frustrations that drive you to eat, or how are you using eating or not taking care of yourself as an excuse or,
So this whole idea of emotional eating is something that you want to educate people in?
Yes.
And so, can you give me an example of something that I might tell myself that is really destructive?
Well, I think falling off the wagon, you know, I blew it today, so now I'm just going to eat whatever I want for the next month or until I try to be good again.
So that's a pretty common impulse, and just changing that reaction?
Right.
Okay. What else education-wise is important? Like what would I learn that's going to be a huge benefit to me in losing weight?
How to stop making excuses for why you
okay.
eat?
Okay. So you're going to teach me how to stop making excuses?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay. And can you come up with a good third benefit? Of a weight loss coaching program?
To feel great in your clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
To feel great in your clothes, to feel comfortable in your own skin with how you look.
Yeah, so really confident in my look.
Yes.
And why would I come to you? Like, why don't I just get one of those ad machines, or can't I get some acai berry shake or something? You know, what is different about you, a coaching program with you?
Well, one of the biggest things is this is weight is an issue that I dealt with when I was younger. I used to actually weigh about 40 pounds more than I do now.
Yeah.
And so I know the struggles. I know how it is, how it feels to, you know, stuff yourself all weekend because Monday you're going to start a diet or whatever excuses people tell themselves what they're going to do. Or, like I said, I already ate all this stuff today, so I'm just going to keep eating for a while. Or give yourself give yourself the excuse that you can, you know, it's the holidays, so I'll just eat for the next 2 months, and then I'll start a diet in January, or, you know, I mean, those are all things that I actually told myself at some point in time.
Yeah, so this idea of, you know, I've been there, I know the struggles, and I changed my thought process on it.
Right.
Good. So this is very important because whenever people obviously buy something, there's a choice. There's a choice to buy nothing and save their money. There's a choice to go with you, and then there's a choice to invest in something else to solve this problem. And the concept of positioning in sales and marketing is the concept of why me? Why would I choose this program? And weight loss is a fairly competitive niche from all accounts, and the real upside of it is it's a very important niche that is very popular and it's evergreen. You'll always have interest in it. Will never be flagging, right? But
right.
One of the things that I'm going to have you develop and expand from what you just said is, you know, why me? And so I'd like you to go and look at competitors in terms of them describing their benefits, like find some weight loss coaches online and get a sense of how they're describing themselves as to why go to them and just get a sense of what they're saying. And so what you're going to want to come up with is a way of talking about the mental game, so to speak, you know, the mental game of dieting, or not dieting, but the mental game of losing weight. It is, you know, basically what you're telling me is, you know, thin people think differently than people who are yo-yo dieting.
Right.
And so that's a way of talking about why this program is different. It's not just that we're going to meet every week. It's not just that I'm providing you support. It's that I'm going to teach you the mindset of, you know, someone who is consistently thin without having to think about it or work at it a whole lot. So that's an example of positioning. And you can use that, but you can come up with anything you want. So a good thing to do whenever you're picking a niche for anything is to look at, you know, the range of position, like other pitches, and get a sense of, you know, so in weight loss, I noticed that a big fad was the acai berry. And, you know, whenever you see one of these infomercials on TV that are telling you, here's how this works, they have to tell you that there's something unique about that ab machine or that shake or that diet pill or whatever, and it has to be very believable, and it has to work. You know, it has to work. And so, you know, why does the acai berry work? You know, why does this ab machine work? There has to be a compelling reason about why it actually works. And there has to be an explanation. And so the benefits are, you know, you've identified the benefits. You're going to lose weight. You're going to feel great. You're going to be supported. It's going to be accountable. And you're going to learn some things you've never learned before about maintaining a consistent weight and losing that weight. And, you know, there has to be a reason to believe you.
Right.
And one of the things that it's, you know, when you told me earlier about, you know, being hesitant or shy to sell. It's really common to feel that way when you're not thinking about the customer. You don't want to be thinking about yourself in any kind of sales process because that's not effective. You've got to be thinking about them all the time. How are you going to make their life better? How is this going to work for them better than anything that you've ever given them before? It's actually a really selfless process, and it's completely based in empathy. How am I going to give them 10 times the value that they're going to pay me? And you're always thinking about your customer. And if you're focused on you and your emotional experience, then you've lost the very essence of the sales mindset. And so the moment you start feeling that way, you know you've lost the mindset and you need to go back to, hey, wait a minute, what is really beneficial to that person? How is this person really going to make it happen and get the happiness and the joy and the confidence from the from this coaching program? Mm-hmm. You understand the difference?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's where your mind needs to be all the time. When you're thinking about how to communicate and when you're going to communicate, whether it's on the phone or in a ad or online or whatever, it always has to be that. So just as an example for positioning, I have on the blueprint here the headline for my – I have a program for athletes and coaches that helps them perform under pressure. And the headline is Amazing Mental Toughness Secret Hoarded by Superstar Athletes Gives You Unshakable Confidence, Eliminates Choking, and Infuses You with the Courage to Win Under Pressure in Just 3 Hours. And the things you want to notice about that headline are there are 3 distinct benefits. Actually, there are 4. Unshakable confidence is a benefit. Eliminating choking is a benefit. Infusing you with the courage to win under pressure is a benefit. And fast is a benefit. So there are actually 4 benefits in 1 headline. And there's also a reason why it's believable. And that is because the whole explanation for why it's going to work is about the fact that top athletes have a natural mental toughness system, way of approaching competition, inner game tendency that athletes who don't reach their goals do not know about and do not understand. But this is not commonly known because it's just not, it doesn't help you to share that with other athletes if you're competing. It's not something that's talked about. And so it really is true that only the very top athletes know about it at all. That's the truth of it.
Okay.
There is no benefit to them in sharing it whatsoever. Now, I shared it because I happen to be in a really obscure sport that, and I'm a female, so I wasn't going to ever be able to play professionally in what I did. So there is no downside to me to sharing that. Whereas if I'm Tiger Woods, there is no benefit at all for me to share that.
Right.
In fact, that's the last thing I'm ever going to do. And he never will. There are things he knows that other people don't know, and he will never share that. And so thinking about the things that you've learned in your travels that other people don't know is very important to this process. Make sense?
Yes.
And not only is that going to develop your presentation, what you're going to put in your advertising and your website, it's going to develop your program, your coaching program. Because everything in this headline that I've just talked about is true. This program does all of those things. In fact, it does even more than that. But I just didn't have a kid go for a longer headline. And so you must also have 100% integrity. You must believe in your very core that this works. And I feel that you do. What are your comments on that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I get that. Good. So just based on everything I've just said, I don't expect anything polished, but just sort of give me, sum up your pitch.
You want to lose 20 to 40 pounds in the next 6 months, feel good, feel comfortable. I kind of like that, comfortable in your own skin.
That's nice, yeah.
Give me a call or email me or something.
Yeah, so this focus of losing this amount of weight, you've got a time frame, you know, feel good, feel comfortable. And so, you know, you're going to continue to massage that to get it to exactly where you want it to be. But that's a good starting point.
Okay.
And what I'd like you to do is go out and look at other weight loss programs. And see, take a look at their headlines, take a look at what they're promising, take a look at the benefits that they're promoting.
Okay.
And that will give you some good ideas. So, what is one thing you can do this week that's going to bring you closer to your goal of having a successful campaign?
I will definitely work on writing this. I'll go look at what other people have for their benefits and how they write that. That will be my goal.
That's splendid. Very well done. Good. Do you have any other questions or comments you want to share with me about this?
I don't think so at the moment, anyway. I may, after I look at this a little bit more, but right now I think I have general idea.
Good.
The one question I was the other day was, is whatever I like what I write up, is that the home page on your website offering your, you know, if you're doing coaching or whatever I'm gonna offer, that's kind of what's gonna be on that first page of the website?
Yeah, I actually don't think there's a, if that's the main offer that you're focusing on right now, I think that could be a great homepage. What's most important, though, is that however people find you, you just want to make sure that that's the page that they see.
Okay.
So if somebody comes from, you know, if you place an ad online, for example, like an online banner ad or something, and they click on it, you want them to click to a page that basically is inviting them to either subscribe to your newsletter or gives them the direct offer right there. But because it's a longer commitment, you know, you're not selling them a $25 book or something, I would definitely have them invite them to opt in. But remember, when you're selling a newsletter, it's just as important to sell it as you would something that's very expensive because it's people's time, and so you need to explain the benefits just as well. So the bottom line is, what matters is what page they get to. The first thing that they see has to be a very compelling sales presentation for them to opt in.
Okay.
Make sense? So if you place an ad in a newsletter, or wherever they go from that, it's gonna ask them to either call you or go to a website or something. Whatever page they get to has to have that presentation on it.
Okay.
Right? That's the most important thing.
Okay.
Okay. And just, you know, because everybody is going to be developing their own coaching niche and their own coaching process for bringing in clients, I want to pause here and just say that, remember, we're going to have module 9 is going to cover a lot of this stuff, and I've actually located a program that can provide you with a lot more depth for those people that, you know, want to do this more, you know, as professionals and commercially and get a lot of clients and so on. Not everybody in the program wants to do that. Some people do and some people don't, which is perfectly fine. but we will, there is more depth to go into. What I will say, just Mary, I want to just, in terms of the pitch that you gave me, which is like lose 20, 40 pounds in 6 months, feel good and comfortable in your skin. As a layperson, getting that, what I will tell you is losing the 20 to 40 pounds is hugely appealing to me. 6 months is not.
Okay.
Because it's too long.
Yes.
Even though it'll, I know my brain knows it'll take that long. I don't want to see that.
Okay.
Okay. So you don't lie to them and tell them it's going to take them a week, because that's not integrity. But if that's going to turn me off, you don't want to include something like that.
Okay.
And then feel good, not bad, but don't I want to feel great?
Okay.
You know, so start thinking about that just objectively, right?
Right.
If you look at your words and go, well, feel good is nice, but I want to feel great. And then comfortable in my skin, well, that's nice, but what do I really want to feel?
Okay.
So tell me, what do I really want to feel?
Well, that would be...
How did you feel when you lost all the weight?
I felt good in my clothes. I felt comfortable. It felt good to be around people again.
Yeah. So if I feel good to be around people, give me some adjectives that are going to pump me up here.
Energetic.
Good. That's a nice – see, now, do you notice how energetic? That's a word that it's got like a – it's got energy to it,
right?
That's a powerful word. And there are tons of books that are, you know, phrases that sell and words that sell all over the place. You can even go to the library and get them. But the language you pick is very, very important. You want to have words that get people excited.
Excited
and that's why, pardon me?
Excited about life again?
Just excited about the results, yeah. And so that's why it's really good to test out your pitch on friends and people and say, hey, what do you like better? Do you want to feel confident and sexy? Or do you want to feel comfortable in your clothes? You see what I'm getting at?
Yep.
So you just start looking at words and playing with words. But when you go and look at other people's pitches, that's what I want you looking at are those words.
Okay.
What words are they actually using? You've got to get to the details. It's like Tom Peters said, God is in the details. You got to get right down into those details.
Okay.
And I will say that this is the art of copywriting, and, you know, not everybody who has a business does their own copywriting, but certainly if you're starting out, because copywriting is a very expensive thing to get done for you, so it's a nice skill to learn, especially if you want to save money.
Okay.
Dean, are you on the line? Dean, are you there?
Sorry, just trying to get the mute off here.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
Okay, well, we just went through some work on the sales success when we were talking about a coaching business or a website, and you know, that's certainly one element of sales, but a whole other element is when you're an executive and when you're working inside a company. And so, you know, you're selling things all day, ideas and projects, just not in the same way that we just talked about.
That's right.
But the process is actually really similar. It's just that you're not writing an ad campaign. And this is very important because I want to show that they are very similar and that the concepts all really apply. So can you tell me a sales goal that you have right now? Because I think you were wanting to get some VPs excited about some things.
Well, I guess I could use a good example would be if I have some projects that I'm working on,
good.
And I need to sell any of these projects up the ladder.
Right. So, and that's pretty common at the executive level, is it not?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That happens all the time.
Right. Okay, good. So can you narrow one down for us just so that we have something specific we can sink our teeth into?
Sure. I've got a project that involves introducing a new product at one of our production plants.
Okay. So the project is introducing a new product at a production plant. Excellent. And when you think about, so who do you want to sell this idea to? Can we just get one person to start?
Sure. I need to sell, it would have to be VP of manufacturing because the product's going to be introduced in his one of his plants.
Good. Okay. So you got to get the buy-in from him or her for sure. Is it a he or she?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a he.
Yeah, that's great. And what is the usual format? You know, how do you, is it a meeting? Is it a presentation? How do you usually do this?
Usually it's a presentation to a steering committee.
Okay. And how many people would be there?
Probably six.
Six people, okay. And do you do the presentation alone?
Typically I would do it alone, but sometimes my boss would be there for support.
Yeah, very good. Okay. And when you're doing the presentation, what are the key skills that you need to bring, like sales skills that you need to bring forth here?
I think the key thing is to get to the right level of detail and to also hit the key issues that they are going to be concerned about.
Okay, so it sounds like the second one seems to be more about objections, like handling their objections.
That's a big part of it. Yeah.
Yep. And the first part, getting the right level of detail, what do you mean by that?
Well, like a lot of these projects can be quite complicated, but you can sort of go in so deep, say, on the engineering side that you're missing the bigger picture.
Okay. So what is the product? Well, just give us the broad brushstrokes so we understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, some of it I can't talk about, but basically it's an enhanced product that we could probably cover off with our existing products, but it's being marketed as having everything the customer needs all in one particle. So instead of blending a bunch of other particles to kind of get the end result, this product will have it all in one piece.
Okay. Is it a service or is it a physical product?
It's a physical product.
Okay. I know I'm sure there's a lot of confidentiality involved, but can you give me just a category of product that I can relate to?
It's a plant nutrient. It's a fertilizer.
Okay, thanks. Okay, great. All right. So we've got the steering committee. We've got six people. And when you say the right level of detail, you said if it's too much detail, they're going to get lost in the minutiae.
I think the part about the detail is to be really focused on what you need from the meeting. So you need to provide the detail that supports what your end result is.
As in the customer's end result or whose end result?
Let's say, for instance, that I need to go to the meeting to get approval to spend money to move this project forward.
Yep.
So I need to, make sure that I'm answering the questions that they would have versus kind of taking them down a long, involved, detailed discussion around, I don't know, changes in the production plant to the minute level.
Got it. So basically, go ahead. So you think about the questions I might have before you craft the presentation.
Yeah.
In quite a bit of detail. Like what I mean is you really go into the mindset of their question.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you kind of hit some sort of – there's some typical questions like can we sell the product? Where would we sell the product? How much of a change to the production process is it? What is the impact on the, say, environmental performance of the plant? Mm-hmm. That type of thing. How confident are we on the capital cost estimate?
Okay, hang on. I'm just capital cost. And these are their main things that they're thinking about in the background? Can
yeah,
we
I
sell
think
it?
So,
what are the changes in the plant required? What are the environmental changes required? And are we confident about the capital cost? Are those the main things that they're focusing on?
Typically, yes. Yeah.
Yes, good. Okay, so for you, when you think about your strengths in sales, where are you really good?
I think I'm good at distilling the minutiae or the complications into succinct sort of issues that need to be brought out. So it's kind of having the right level of detail when we're talking through the project.
Right. So when you answer the questions we just that we said, like, can we sell it? Like, what you're saying is, if it's too much detail, it their eyes glaze over and they're not staying with you. And if it's not enough, it's not convincing.
Yeah, it's a bit of that, and it's also a bit of a time constraint. Like, I might only have 15, 20 minutes to get through the project and ask for funding, so I can't get too bogged down in detail.
Got it. Okay. Now, that's a huge strength. What else is a huge strength?
I think what my strength is that I kind of understand right from the production side, right through distribution and sales. So I know I've had experience on running projects. I've had experience on running plants, and I've had experience on distributing product and selling it. So I think I can kind of tie it all together and hopefully kind of hit the key issues.
You can see the entire process from start to finish that's going to have to happen.
That's right.
Right. So you can address any possible breakdowns, any risk involved, and also any benefits. It's easy for you to imagine all those things. Yeah.
It's easy for me to imagine where the pitfalls are and how it's all going to fit together.
Nice. So what do you want to improve on?
Well, I guess the kind of the feedback, I'd done some work on understanding what people's perceptions are of me in the company and trying to identify what's holding me back. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that's really kind of come out loud and clear is that I don't do a good job of ahead of the meeting kind of going out and gathering support for the project. So I've been kind of like sort of showing up at the meeting, going through the presentation, and people are kind of coming in cold. So.
Okay. So even though the presentation is important, it's only part of the picture?
Yes.
In terms of being successful?
Absolutely, and it's something that, I've seen, I should know it. It was kind of a blind spot for me.
Good. Well, but good to know.
Yeah.
It's a great piece of info to have. What
do
other people do to get support before the presentation?
Well, I think what other people do is they identify who the key decision makers are in the meeting, because sometimes it depends on the project as to who really is impacted, and they meet with them individually ahead of time to. It's really trying to understand where the level of support and also identifying where some resistance might be at.
Good. And so when they meet with them, what do they say to get that information? I mean, I imagine that sometimes people are forthcoming about resistance, but sometimes they're not.
Yeah, you know, I think what they're doing is just gauging their level of support for the project. And that if there's support, I mean, you're already ahead of the game because you've got someone to champion or support you in a meeting. If there's not, then they start to bring out some questions. And the questions, I think, are kind of the key to where their resistance is.
Right. So for you personally, what's holding you back from having these conversations ahead of time, in your opinion?
Well, I think in the past it was a bit of learned helplessness, and when I looked at it, some of it was pride because I wanted to do it on my own, and some of it probably was self pity around, it was for some of those reasons I just didn't take the initiative, and it was some passivity that was just creeping in.
Did you have any particular project that you tried to get support for individually like this and it just didn't go anywhere? Like you had those individual meetings?
In my job, I look at an awful lot of different projects, and probably only 1 in 10 actually ends up being physically completed. Or it's probably even less than that. It's probably 1 in 20.
Yeah.
So a lot of the sifting I can kind of do at my level, say this project won't work for these reasons and kind of get it killed. But sometimes I'm pushing through projects that I may not necessarily, I think it's got potential, but maybe some of that is the issue, is that some of the projects I may not have 100% belief in, and others I have had and not been able to kind of push through.
Okay, so part of it might be some ambivalence about the project can make it hard to get that support and be enthusiastic about getting it.
Yeah.
Are there any that are in the background that were really near and dear to your heart that didn't go, that is rankling for you?
No, I would, I would say a lot of these projects are a process of discovery. So you walk in and you have an initial set of assumptions and you spend some effort and some money and you find out some more about the project, and it kind of gets revealed over time through work and sometimes usually it's the right decision. You have to kill the project or you go ahead.
Right. So there's no like past, the one that got away, I'm so upset about it. It's more, hey, we found over time that was the right decision not to do it.
Yeah, I think that'd be correct. And I think, thinking about it, Lisa, it's probably more the projects that I didn't have an opportunity to work on, maybe that I might be rankled because I thought, oh, man, that project's that's got more of a probability of success than the one that I'm working on, and I'd rather be working on the other one.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, if I was thinking rankling, that would be it.
That would be the one. Okay. Just as an aside here, do you always know then why things, like when you have these one-on-one meetings and sometimes people are resistant, do you always know why? Do they always share, like as in when something doesn't fly, are you always aware of why you weren't able to get their support? Do they tell you?
Yeah, I think pretty much. But sometimes there are other things that are going on in the background that either they don't want to tell you or they can't tell you. And it may just be some other strategic initiatives that kind of make what I'm working on redundant or less of a priority. Quite often it's resources, too, that there's just not enough resources to do everything. So it may be that people are going, well, yeah, this probably looks like a decent project, but I've got another project over here that I need the people, to work on rather than yours.
Right. So let me ask you this. When you sit back and say, you know, the truth is I really haven't been getting that pre-meeting support, how do you feel about making that part of your process as pretty significant? Does it feel exciting to you? Does it feel easy to you? How does it feel?
Oh, it feels really exciting, actually, and it's got to be And that's sort of the breakthrough for me, and one of the breakthroughs in going through this Courage to Win project is that, okay, I think I've gotten through the blocks that were holding me back before, so now it's less, it doesn't look daunting to me at all. It just looks like part of the process and the way I go and do it.
Wonderful, yeah. So the breakthrough occurred, and now it's really execution is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a little bit of that, I think, too, is that we talked about I matter, and I think before, too, I had a little bit of a feeling like, oh, this project probably isn't that big, and I shouldn't really be bothering this VP about it, and you know, and do they would they really want to talk to me about it? And now I realize, yeah, they do, and I've got to make sure that it's a priority for them.
You know, what you said is so important because to me, it's similar to what Mary and I talked about in terms of it's very easy to get in the mind frame of our own, how we feel in a given day and
yeah.
not, yeah, how is it really going to benefit this person and how is it really going to impact their overall year or their overall goals? And to me, it's what you said about being more objective in a positive way about how what you're offering is going to make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's part of it, too, is when you get into the one-on-one discussion, you can probably unearth some of that stuff around how important is this project to that person. And it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly in the last couple of ones that I've worked on in the recent past.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, sorry, I missed that last couple of words you just said. The recent projects
When I did meet with them one-on-one, it became pretty clear pretty quickly kind of how important it was to them.
Right.
So either
right.
it was or it wasn't, yeah.
Well said, well said. Okay, fabulous. So I just, you know, I wanted to just touch base with that from a sales point of view and noticing that sales can be internal in an organization or external with a business and selling ourselves individually. The blueprint that I put forth really is about this central concept of looking at, you know, how, what is the benefit to this person? And so something as simple as even a job interview, what am I going to take care of? What am I going to take off this person's plate? What am I going to handle? And what breakthroughs am I going to provide that's really going to give this person peace of mind and efficiency and speed, and the company's going to, you know, earn more money? And, you know, really thinking about the benefit is such an obvious thing in sales, but because of all the stigma around sales, it's really, really easy to get into, how I feel and how it's all about me and, you know, my experience that's emotional and my nerves, when in reality, it's not at all about us. It is a little bit about us, but fundamentally, when we get into that other mindset, that is the mindset that it provide success. So I'm going to end on that note, and I really appreciate, thank you very much both Mary and Dean for tonight. We're going to end on that note, and let me just check for questions just to make sure we don't have any, but last time I checked we didn't. But again, really appreciate the demos for tonight, and have a wonderful rest of the evening, and I'll talk to you again soon.